The views expressed on the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
God is a solution. God is a 12-step.
I like where he's going here.
Helps the community grow, helps us grow. Bonnie has done a phenomenal job. And you're talking about taking people through a spiritual process, getting them into recovery.
Thanks, Monty, and thanks for all your support.
We need spirituality to make this thing work long-term.
It's an absolute pleasure. You certainly know a lot of people.
This is one of the places that is about the business of the solution.
And now, broadcasting on location somewhere in the vast expanse of the Pacific Northwest, it's the over-opinionated 12-stepologist, the Monty Man.
That's right. La, 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 la. Woohoo! Hey, we're having some fun now. Welcome to the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show, everyone. If you've never tuned in, you're in for a treat. You're in for a goat. That's the Take 12 Recovery Radio Screaming Goat. If you're on YouTube, say hi to the Screaming Goat. Hello. Hello. Roger McDermott is with us, my co-host extraordinaire from Huntington Beach, California. What's it like down in Huntington Beach, California today, Roger?
You don't want to know because it's cold and ugly in Albany, Oregon. So it is gorgeous, blue sky, 65 degrees, ocean breeze going up to a high of 71. I'd be screaming too if I was in Albany.
Listen, I will say it is cold. It is a tad rainy, but it is never ugly.
Okay.
It's nice and green and overcast. And
it's green down here too because we've had lots of rain.
Oh, have you?
Probably not as much as Albany.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, welcome aboard, everyone. The topic this week on the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show is going to be basic prayer and simple meditation. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because we talk a lot about this in our 12-step fellowships, but I don't know that we talk a lot about it. It just, we mention it a lot. There's a difference, right? There's a difference between mentioning something and actually talking about something. And I think we mention it a lot. I don't know that we go into great depth about it as much as I think we should. And so I don't think prayer and meditation ought to be something that's confusing or even difficult. And so that's why I'm referring to it as basic prayer and simple meditation, which I got the title for the show off this book right here, which I'm going to reference here later, called Basic Prayer and Simple Meditation by Mike D. A recovering alcoholic talks about beginning spirituality. There's a little excerpt on the back of the book here too from myself. It's an easy read, as you can see if you're looking at YouTube. It's really a skinny book because basic prayer and simple meditation is a pretty simple thing. And I think we make it more difficult than it is. So we're going to be talking about that on today's show.
Monty, man, I'm going to interrupt right now because just in case you're planning on giving us a weekly whine, a complaint report, well, I've got something I want to say in this little ditty here. Here we go. Tell us a tale with a compliment. Tell us a positive story this time. We're all tired of your complaining and sick of the weekly whine. That's right, Monty Man. So if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all, Monty Man.
Thank you, Cecil. Well, it just so happens that I am not going to do a weekly wine this week. I don't know what that was. That was weird. I am going to give a compliment. And you know, I don't have any problem throwing retail stores, restaurants, things like that under the bus when they're naughty and misbehave. But at the same time, when somebody does a stellar job at their job and goes above and beyond, I think they should be recognized. And I want to recognize a couple of things. The first one is Best Buy, the retail store Best Buy, which is known primarily for its electronics and appliances. So I did a weird thing. My laptop went belly up on me, and I'm going to be doing some traveling here for the Came to Believe recovery folks here soon. I need a laptop to be able to travel with. And so I broke down. I did some research into what laptops I wanted, and I wanted a Lenovo because Lenovo's their workhorses, and they hold up real well. And so I wanted one with power. I wanted one with power.
Power.
You know, and lots of memory.
Memory.
Memory, memory, memory.
Yeah. And gigabytes and stuff.
Stuff.
You know what I'm saying? I wanted a beast, right? And so, but I wanted something I could travel with. And so I ended up at a Best Buy store up in Portland after coming back from a shopping excursion with my wife for something else. And we stopped in, and I fell in love with this Lenovo Legion, it's called. And it had 2 terabytes of hard drive. It had 32 gig memory. It had, it was just the processor was gigantic. It had whistles and bells. I mean, the keyboard lit up in rainbow colors and moved and all this stuff. But it had the power and everything that I wanted. But it was a gaming computer. And so the guy says, do you want all this power or do you want something that's easy to travel with? Well, you know, kind of how we are sometimes. The whistles and bells grab our attention and we go in that direction. So that's what I did. So I purchased this thing, which when I got it home, I was like, what have I done? What have I done? The thing weighs a ton. And it's got, you know, like 100 fans in it. And it's got, the thing is crazy. It's a beast. Well, I am not a gamer. And so what I learned, Roger, about gamers, my one son is that gaming laptops, yeah, they are meant so you can take them with you if you want to go somewhere on vacation and you want to play games too. But they're not really meant for mobile, you know, flying on the plane and all that kind of stuff. That's what your Surface Pros are meant for, or your little Chromebooks and that kind of stuff. So I thought, I got to go through. And you know what else I did? I got suckered into, and I did it myself, buying a headset, a $200 headset, because I wanted to look like Roger right now. I wanted to look like Roger, right? So I bought this headset. It was a gaming headset. And I bought this Bluetooth mouse. I bought all this stuff. And when I realized what I had done, I said, I got to take it back. I got to go back. So we went to and what I had to do, I bought it in Portland, but then we had to drive all the way to Springfield down by Eugene to pick it up because they didn't have one in Portland. We went through this whole rigmarole. I ended up going back to Salem and taking it back, which is in between Portland and Eugene. And took it back, and I picked myself up a Lenovo that's quite a bit smaller and much more travel-worthy and a lot less expensive. And I said all that to say this. Every person that was the customer service person at each one of those stores, Portland, Salem, and Springfield, they were amazing. Absolutely. I mean, they were young, but they were patient with this old fogey because I had questions about things I didn't know anything about. They were patient. They didn't treat me like I was stupid. They may have been back in the break room going, can you believe this guy? But to my face, they were absolutely amazing. I give kudos to all three of these stores. I don't know if this is Best Buy's policy to be this friendly, courteous, and kind, but I wanted to take them home with me. I mean,
I can second that. I've never had a bad experience at any Best Buy I've ever gone to.
Really?
They're incredibly helpful.
Wow.
They're happy to dedicate time. They're good listeners, and they usually get you what you actually ask for and want and need.
Yeah. Yeah. I
find that to be true.
They at each store, the guy sat down with me. He said, let's clock the speed on these things. Let's look at it. He explained all this stuff to where I could understand it. They all did that. And one guy said, I'm not really sure about this. Let me find somebody that knows a little bit more. And within seconds, there was a guy standing next to me. I mean, there was no wait time. The refund policy went through and everything was great. They didn't ask any questions like, well, you know, I mean, are you sure you want? And nothing like that. They were just so happy to help. And so Best Buy, congratulations. Where's my Denver bell? You get a Denver bell. Good on you. The other thing that I wanted to really encourage people to go see the movie Unsung Hero. This is the story of the group for King and Country, the Christian contemporary pop group for King and Country, and Rebecca St. James. I did not know this, but Rebecca St. James is the sister to the two gentlemen that are from King and Country. And it's the story of their mom, their dad, it's the story of their whole family. And we went and saw it yesterday. Oh, man. Just a great, great movie. It's a production of Lionsgate, which is a very high-end production company. Just remarkable, remarkable story. So if you're into seeing something that is going to give you a good uplift, a true story, a story of hardship and challenges and coming out the other side, you know, just shining stars. You need to go see Unsung Hero while it's still in theaters. And as a matter of fact, so I'm going to give away a little piece of the movie for you because I think it doesn't ruin it at all. But Roger, do you have any idea where Rebecca St. James got her last name?
No.
Okay.
It's ironic though. I was driving home yesterday from a camp out with the youth at church.
And yeah.
We had live on the screen on the message on XM radio. They were interviewing for King and Country, and they were talking all about the movie and the fact the lead singer it plays his father.
Yes.
So I heard the whole and so I'm definitely gonna go see.
Oh, it just give me chills.
But I'm gonna grab my son and yeah.
Yeah, it gives me chills even talking about it right now. It's so good. Their last name is actually Smallbone. That's the family's last name. And so they were in the process of Rebecca Smallbone. She had this incredible voice, and the whole family wanted her to pursue it, but they kept hitting dead ends. And the dad was managing Striper at the time. And but anyway, they were having struggles getting in to see anybody, and they, through a series of events I won't give away, they ran into Eddie DeCarmo from DeCarmo and Key, and which was one of the early Christian rock groups, right? They came on the scene around the time of Randy Stonehill and Petra and those guys. And this guy, DeCarmo, he was a bit of a, not very nice. Let's just put it that way. He was a hard, he was kind of a knucklehead. And so they had a hard time getting in an audition with him. Well, finally, it did happen where she finally did. But he said, you got to change your last name. You know, Smallbone isn't going to cut it. And so her grandpa was named James. And Eddie DeGarmo says, how about St. John? How about Rebecca St. John? And she said, how about Rebecca St. James? Because that was her grandpa's name. And he had passed away recently. You know, and it was like, he was just like, yeah, that's good. It doesn't give anything in the movie away because it's just an amazing movie. Go see it, Unsung Hero, while you still can. So there you go. There's my compliments. No weekly whine. For those of you who like to hear me complain, Sorry, for those of you who are tired of it, you got a reprieve. So there we go, Roger.
There you have it.
Yep, there you have it.
Rule number one, I can't kill anybody.
Yeah, so don't ask.
Or rule number two, I can't make anybody fall in love with anybody else. Rule number three,
I can't bring people back from the dead.
That's right. So I'm not going to give you guys three promises or three wishes that I won't do a wine next week. But I can't bring people back from the dead. I can't make anybody fall in love. And I can't grant more wishes than three wishes. I can't grant any wishes, actually. I don't even know why I played that sound clip. I have no idea. So we'll be back right after this with the topic, basic prayer and simple meditation. Don't go away.
Do you ever feel stuck in your recovery? I mean, we all have felt stagnant from time to time. I'd like to introduce you to the book, 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, Getting Your Recovery Unstuck, by our good friend and recovery author, Dr. Alan Berger. Dr. Berger has helped to change the lives of thousands of individuals with his work on emotional sobriety, paving a new path to recovery for both the addict and their families. For your autographed copy of 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, visit abphd.com. This book is also available on Amazon.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Listen, are you looking for some great recovery workshops that you can download for fun and for free? Well, look no further. Visit our website at take12radio.com. Scroll down to the Recovery Workshops banner, and there you will find some of the most informative and vital workshops with the topics of recovery on the internet today. Included in them is Walking Through the Big Book with myself and Chris S., Step by Step Toward Emotional Sobriety with Dr. Alan Berger, and many more. Please check them out today. Take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
Mary Mac, dressed in black, silver buttons all down her back. Hello, tipsy toe.
Ow!
She broke a needle and she can't sew. Walking the dog.
Uh-huh.
Just a walking bird dog. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you.
That's right. I'll show you how to walk the dog. Rufus Thomas there with Walk the Dog. The world of music is phenomenal. What would we do without music? Right, Roger?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
This stuff is timeless. I haven't heard that song in I don't know when, and I'm like right there. I'm right there.
I know.
I'm all plugged in. It's like I was just listening to it yesterday.
I know.
But I wasn't.
It's just great. Listeners, if you ever, especially if you're Rogers and I's age, I won't say what that is, but.
Old.
You know, if you are, and you do a deep dive into the artists that performed at Woodstock, the original Woodstock. You'll be amazed. I mean, there was people there. I had no idea that was their first public performance. You know, a lot of folks came out of there. Michael Lang and what's his name? Artie Cornfield, who put that whole thing on. Amazing story. Okay, so basic prayer and simple meditation. All right, so this is a step 10 and 11 discussion. Because in step 10 and 11... we talk about this whole idea of continuing, obviously, in our application and implementation of the spiritual disciplines found in the 12 steps. This is a show that is very 12-step friendly, obviously. And Roger and I have been talking about for some time now, we've been having these discussions around the steps. And so we're on 10 and 11. And you know, Roger, I was talking to one of my sponsees the other day, and he called me up and he said, can you go over that wake up in the morning, retire at night thing again? And I said, read this page and just do it. And you know what? I left my big book. I don't know what I did with it. Anyway, it's not here. It's in the car. But anyway, it's very simplistic, I think. And you know what it comes down to when it comes down to maintaining a prayer and meditation kind of life. You know, the big book basically says, you know, when I retire at night, I review my day and I ask God. So whenever the big book says we ask God, and it says that several times in the literature, that means we're going to pray, right, Raj?
Yeah.
I ask God. So that means we're going to pray. Well,
it's real simple. In the Bible, it says you receive not because you ask not.
Yeah.
So I always tell my sponsees or anybody, so ask.
Yeah.
God, he says, I'm standing here waiting for you to ask me to do something. Come boldly to the throne and bring me your concerns and issues. I'm here right now. I want to talk to you.
Yes. Yes. So when we retire at night, we ask God to show us where we've been selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, where we arouse jealousy, where we cause discord, all that kind of thing. You know, show us that. I may know some of that, but there may be some of it I missed because, you know, the big book earlier on talks about even our good intentions, right? We may be gracious, you know, and kind in our manipulation of other people. So sometimes we miss that, and we need our Creator to point it out sometimes. And so we can settle the score with Him and ask Him to forgive us. And He does, and He has. Before we even do it.
Yes, yes.
But so we can understand that we can go to bed, we can lay our head down on our pillow, even though we've been a knucklehead that day, and we can still sleep in the rest that we have communicated through prayer with the divine. And we can sleep soundly now. I don't have to go to bed with a bunch of guilt and remorse on my plate, even if I haven't made amends yet. I can still go to bed with peace, don't you think?
I totally do. What it says in step 10, right? When wrong, promptly admit it. I choose to try and do it on the spot at the moment when I'm aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't have a whole list of things I have to cover before I lay my head down. Because sometimes my mind, when I'm ready to go to sleep, is not focused and centered and so forth. So if I do it throughout the day, the concept that's talked about is continual, constant contact with God. And so we've done our seven steps. We've made our list in eight, and now we're all about doing our ninth step. Then we don't have to go do another fourth and fifth step or any other steps over again.
Right.
We do a 10. We do a 10 every, I choose to do it throughout the day so that I don't have a laundry list of issues at the end of the day when I lay my head down. But however we do it, we have to do it. And I just like doing it promptly.
Yeah, and I think some people get confused is they go, well, so-and-so isn't ready to hear my amends right now. That's fine. But you need to promptly admit this just because you can't go to them because they may have a wall up right now or whatever. You can still promptly admit it to God, yourself, right, and another person, right?
We're talking about talking with God.
Yeah. So you don't have to wait.
It's about cleaning our house. It doesn't mean you have to wait till you make amends. You may not be able to make direct amends. That's not the question.
That's not the
question.
The question
is, admitting I've made a mistake, admitting I'm wrong, asking God for forgiveness, knowing that He already has, and be resolved in that internally, spiritually.
Yeah.
So you're fit, you're whole, and you don't mess up the rest of your day. I don't want to carry that baggage around all day if I've been wrong.
No.
And just get about it. Do it now.
Yeah, do it now. And by all means, when you know we are willing to make that direct amends if the appropriate time arises.
Sure.
You know, we're always because sometimes you say, well, all these circumstances don't permit me to do that. But are you always willing? Is the willing button on pause? I mean, not pause, but is it there ready for you to push and go do it if it becomes an appropriate time to do it? And I think that's important.
I think people in addiction, we all of us, are the funniest people in the world.
We
because
are.
We always look at something and we're looking for, it seems like we're looking for a loophole to not have to really do it. Well, I can't make direct amends right now, so it's like, no, that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
We're talking about being completely transparent, being completely accountable, being responsible when you're wrong, and admitting it. Because the freedom for us comes when we admit it. We've already gotten God's forgiveness. It's a done deal. But we want to receive it and ask. And we want to have communication with God, that continual, constant contact. And then I go through my day, I'm not carrying a bunch of craziness in my head.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, and then upon awakening, basically we ask God to help us not fall into those things that we did the day before. You know, show me how to avoid being selfish and self-centered. And we do that throughout our day, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, when in step nine, where it talks about we intuitively, we learn to handle situations that used to baffle us. A lot of that is talking about, you know, financial amends and things like that. But I think it applies to all sorts of aspects of our life. By the time we get to 10 and 11, it's like, and I've said this before, because I used to do this early on in my four step. I would carry some 3x5 cards in my pocket and a pen. And when something would come to my mind, you know, I'd write it down. And I kind of got into a practice of doing that. I don't have to do that anymore. I intuitively know how to handle situations that I used to have to stop, pull over, write it down, do all this crazy stuff. But it's almost automatic now, you know, and I'll be in a situation and maybe it's talking to a retailer that isn't as nice as the men and women at Best Buy, and they're just being knuckleheads and treating me, you know, horribly. And that happens. What I found is, like, and I believe it's the Holy Spirit, is taps on my little brain and goes, okay, I know how you want to respond, but this is how you and I are going to respond together. Okay.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, cool. It's just, and it's like, it's just there. It's just, you know, and people say, and let me ask you, people have asked you this. People say, how do you do that? How do you walk through this? How do you keep yourself so positive all day long with all the BS that's going on in the world?
I just had that conversation with somebody last night because I said, well, they asked me, why are you always how you are?
Yeah.
Because I don't have bad days.
Right.
So some are just different. But I asked people, well, explain to me in great detail. Tell me about your bad day. And usually what I found, at least I'll put it in my own context, when I say, I don't say it anymore because I don't have them, but if someone's having a bad day, typically it's because my expectations weren't met or I didn't get what I thought I deserved or wanted or whatever. I try not to live that way anymore. That's the way I was before recovery.
Yeah.
And I don't set myself up with expectations that are going to turn into resentments and anger and all that stuff. So I have learned the hard way, not the easy way. I don't do anything the easy way. I have learned the hard way that when something's going on and I don't like it, I look up and say, okay, I don't know what you're doing, but you want to teach me something right now. And I want to be willing and open-minded and learn the lesson that you want to teach me. And I never was that way before recovery. Never. And I mean, never.
Oh yeah, me either.
And yeah.
I always had a reason why. I mean, my dad used to try to point it out to me, and I didn't hear him. He'd say, you know what you do all the time? All the time. I go, what's that? He goes, you're always like, what's not my fault? I didn't do anything wrong. You know, I look back at my life, and I go, man, I did say that. Every time I got into a pickle, my first response was, I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I didn't do anything.
Me too. People used to tell me when I got caught doing what I wasn't supposed to be doing, I always had an excuse.
Yeah.
And then people say, I don't want any of your excuses. And I go, wait a minute, that's not an excuse. I got to give you an explanation. Oh, like that's a difference between another word for an excuse. I wasn't ever guilty was the point.
Yeah.
I'm Monty. We're victims of circumstance. Yeah, victim of circumstance.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
I am not victim of circumstance.
That's right. So we're asking God to, you know, to show us where we've been like this. And then, you know, we're asking God in the morning to show us how we can avoid all that kind of stuff. And when it says we continue to take personal inventory, it doesn't mean we go back to step four. It means we're doing a heart and brain check throughout the day.
Yes.
Throughout the day. And we get to a point where we intuitively know how to do that just automatically. So reading from A Basic Prayer and Simple Meditation, A Recovering Alcoholic Talks About Beginning Spirituality by Mike D., this wonderful little book. I love this. He says, I've always thought that a bird in flight is a very spiritual thing. He's talking about, prior to this paragraph I'm going to read, he's talking about this idea of what in the world does spirituality mean anyway. It conjures up all sorts of ideas. It can conjure up, you know, somebody sitting cross-legged on the floor listening to meditation music, you know, and lighting incense. It can conjure up thoughts of sitting on the beach and just emptying your mind. You know, there's all sorts of things it can conjure up. So he talks about it like this. I've always thought that a bird in flight is a very spiritual thing. I still think so. Yet, at an earlier time in my sobriety, I would have given you a much different reason. I would have said it's because it appears that a bird is a creature who is totally free of all restriction. Darting and gliding anywhere he wants, he seems to be conforming to nothing, obeying no one, observing no laws, unencumbered by any rules. At that time in my sobriety, that's what I thought spirituality was. Spirituality, as I saw it then, demands nothing from you and commands you to do nothing. It just allows you to be perfectly free. It's total freedom, like a bird. Then, one morning, I noticed a stark reality about birds that never occurred to me before as I was watching a young sparrow swoop back and forth around my window. Just as I was feeling a little bit envious of his freedom, I suddenly realized that this little bird was not free, at least not in the way I thought he was free. No, actually, a bird in flight is strictly obeying a very definite set of laws and rules, the natural laws of aerodynamics. He was first introduced to these laws as a fledgling leaving the nest. He had gone through a learning process, which taught him there is a right way to fly and a wrong way, and he learned to distinguish between the two. Through a repeated process of flying and falling and flying, he found out that he must conform himself to these natural laws. The laws would never conform to him. Yes, it was all very rigorous. Every lesson and every trial flight was all about learning precisely how to obey rigid, unbending natural laws. It was as uncomplicated as this. When he obeyed them, he flew. When he didn't, he fell out of the sky. Pretty simple program. The more I watched this bird, the more I came to understand that it was actually his rigorous obedience to those laws of nature that kept him up in the air and gave him the freedom God intended him to have when he created him. Now, wait a minute. Does this mean obedience is the key to freedom? How could this be? I had always thought obedience to do anything or anyone is a loss of freedom, not the gaining of it. This turned everything around for me. Needless to say, having never connected obedience to freedom before, I had to learn that about spirituality and what it really is. Wow.
I love that. That's something that's not normally spoken about. Obedience equates to freedom.
Right. Right.
And yet, if you think that through, the 12 steps are designed for that. We practice these principles in all our affairs, and the scriptures talk about how we live the principles that Christ taught us. Why? Know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And so that's the truth of the matter, is that we need discipline, we need guidelines, we need principles, we need love, we need tolerance and kindness, we need to live by those. When we do that, you and I know, and people that have done what we do, and others, we're free. Free from the nonsense that goes on between our ears. It doesn't control me anymore. I love my freedom. And freedom comes from obedience. But it's so weird, because when we were kids, we didn't want to obey anything.
Yeah.
And we thought we were free from mom, dad, teachers, all that. It's like,
yeah,
that's a lie. Yeah. It's a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're a parent and you watch your child do what you used to do, you know, and say, you know what, dad, when I get to be an adult like you, I'm going to do things differently. I'm going to have things my way when I get to be an adult. And then they get to be an adult. And then you hear things like this. I hate adulting. I don't want to be an adult anymore. It reminds me of Tudor the Turtle. Do you remember Tudor the Turtle and Mr. Wizard?
Of course I remember Tudor the Turtle.
So Tudor, for those who don't know, we're dating ourselves again. Tudor the Turtle always wanted something that he wasn't meant to have. He always, you know, one time he wanted to be an Indian chief. And so he went to Mr. Wizard. Please, Mr. Wizard, help me to be an Indian chief. Why do you want to be an Indian chief? Because I want to be in charge of the whole tribe. All right. So Mr. Wizard would send him, you know, in through some portal, and he'd end up coming out the other side as an Indian chief, where Tudor would quickly realize there was responsibilities at being an Indian chief, and they weren't always very fun. And so when he got tired of, you know, the mess he got himself into, he'd say, help me, Mr. Wizard. I don't want to be an Indian chief anymore. And Mr. Wizard would simply say, frizzle, frazzle, frozzle, frome, time for this one to come home. And he'd come home and he would have learned his lesson until the next episode, right? Well, that's kind of us. I mean, you know, we think we want.
I can tell you that for a fact. When I was in grade school, I wanted to be an altar boy, right?
Yeah.
But only because I wanted to put on the garb.
The garb.
I wanted to carry the incense. I wanted to hold the crucifix and walk down the aisle in front of Father so-and-so.
Yeah.
And then I learned that I had to memorize all these prayer in Latin. Well, that meant I had to do work.
Oh,
I
no.
immediately quit and went back to football. I just, I didn't sign up to do work, learn something.
Right.
No. I just want to look good and do the stuff. You know, I want to wave the incense and ring the bells and hold the, that's disgusting. That's who I was. That's me.
So when we ask God to show us how to avoid being a knucklehead, then obedience would require us, not suggest, but it would require that if we're going to be successful, that when we ask him to show us, then we do what he tells us. And if he says, son, daughter, I want you to go down this road instead today, not this one. And we go, I got a better idea. Then you're probably going to end up at the end of your day, looking at your day going, poop.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
You know, and so, but because we have a tendency to do that, we keep doing this, right? We keep living in the go, as we would, you and I would say.
Yeah.
And we keep, you know, looking at our day, inventorying our day at night, and asking God to direct us upon awakening. It's so vitally important. And we're back to walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, aren't we?
Yes.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole concept of intuitive, like it says in step 12, we practice these principles in all our affairs.
And
the more that you practice anything, that practice turns into intuition. We call it muscle memory. You can define it different ways, but the fact is it becomes more natural and normal because you practice it so many times.
You know, I knew
it's like doing anything.
I knew a lady years ago when I was going to Bible college. She was the church mom, right? She was like everybody's mom in the youth group. And I used to think back then, I thought, man, she just over-spiritualizes everything. Because she would pray before everything. You know, we're going to get gas. Okay, well, when we get to the gas station, let's pray that the guy that's pumping the gas, let's pray that maybe he gets saved. Really? Yeah. So, you know, we pray that, you know, getting ready to go to church, you know, or go on a youth group event or whatever. Okay. Well, we're going to pray for traveling mercies. Okay. Well, we kind of do that anyway, right? Yeah. But each car is going to pray. And so we did that, you know, taking her dog to the vet. We're going to pray for the dog. You know, it was just like everything was preceded by a prayer. I didn't realize back then how right on she was. She was involving God in every aspect of her day, no matter how ridiculous it seemed to everybody else. You know, she's going to go to the library. She's going to pray before she goes to the library. You know, and so what we have a tendency to do as humans is cry out to God, "Where are you?" When things aren't going our way. And I've been right here the whole time, and you just stopped talking to me.
Right.
So that's what it is, isn't it? Isn't prayer, you know, just keeping the lines of communication open with our Heavenly Father, talking to our Heavenly Father? You know, I remember my aunt saying, "Well, I'm not going to pray for that. God's got other things. He's got bigger things to worry about. I'm not going to pray for that." You know, I'd say, "Why don't you pray about it, Aunt Pat? I'm not going to pray for that. That's selfish. That's selfish to ask God for that. He's busy." What about meditation? So this conjures up a lot of things. So meditation, what is that for you, Roger?
Quietly listening. I've prayed, I've spoken to, and now I'm quietly listening for the Spirit to speak to me. And just, it's quiet time with God, is how I view it.
Can you have quiet time for God in the middle of traffic?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, me too.
I can have quiet time with God anywhere I'm at, as long as I quiet my mind. It doesn't matter where what the surroundings are.
Right.
Not that I'm not closing my eyes on the freeway, but my point is that I can quiet my mind, and I can be having it. Just like if someone's sitting on my right in the passenger seat, I can have a deep conversation while I'm driving.
Yes.
I can have a deep conversation with God while I'm driving, mm-hmm. or while I'm doing other things, because my focus and my mindset is centered and focused on Him. And I want some kind of response, whether it just be a sense of overwhelming calm, or whether He gives me a scripture, or whether He brings something else to mind, or He may say something else like call your sponsor or call so and so. But it's quietly listening and not talking, because before you and I got sober, it was hard for us to close our mouth and listen. I was not a good listener before recovery.
No, nor was I. So you can even, you and I, and hopefully others, once we learn how to quiet our mind, we're able to do that even in the middle of Thanksgiving at Mom's. Right?
anywhere, anytime.
The in-laws are all arguing about, and usually the biggest argument I've seen at Thanksgiving is everybody argues about where they were the last Thanksgiving or the Thanksgiving. No, we were at Aunt Joni's. No. We were at it. And they get into this big discussion that lasts all day, you know, and maybe you're not into football, right? And so all this stuff is going on. You can quiet your mind in the midst of all that, you know, and be at peace. You really can, especially when you keep your mouth shut when you know you're right, when you're hanging out with the in-laws. That's a good practice, you know.
Well, it says that in the book, doesn't it, where we match calamity with serenity?
Right.
When you're in the middle of the storm, that's like I always talk about a hurricane. The calmest place in a hurricane is right smack dab in the middle, in the eye of the hurricane. It is perfectly calm and perfectly peaceful.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can have stuff swirling all around you, but if your mind's focused on God, you can be perfectly calm and peaceful.
So I want to emphasize there is a difference between quieting your mind and emptying your mind. A lot of Eastern philosophy suggests that you empty your mind. I think that can be dangerous.
I don't do that.
I don't think we should empty our mind. I think there's certain things our mind should be filled with. And even in meditation, But quieting our mind is different. So I'm going to refer to Philippians 4:8. Think, that's our mind, and remember, that's also where a lot of our problem is, right, is how we think. Think about these things, the things that are true, things that are honest, things that are right, clean, and pure, things that are lovely, and things that are good to talk about. If they are good and righteous, think on these things. So if I'm filling my head with music that is harsh, negative, destructive in nature, that's what my mind's going to develop. And that's the areas that I'm going to refer to if I'm doing that on a regular basis. If I'm watching programming that is constantly negative, what am I filling my head with? If I'm reading material that is constantly negative and critical. Now, I'm not saying we you know, we live in a world where we really, to be informed, there's certain things we need to listen to. There's certain entertainments that are okay in moderation, you know. But what are you filling your mind with? You know, and so scripture tells us these are the things we need to think on. These are the things we need to fill our mind with. The things that are pure and righteous and holy and good, you know. And that's why there are certain settings that I may find myself in with other people, Roger, where there have been times I've had to excuse myself and just say, guys, I need to go. You guys have a good day. You guys have a good day.
Right.
Right. And one of those areas was, and I don't struggle with this anymore, but one of those areas was hanging out with a bunch of guys at the smoke break telling dirty jokes.
Yeah.
It really started to convict me. And so I asked a brother, I said, what should I do about this? He goes, just excuse yourself.
Yeah.
And you know what? I started doing that. Nobody was offended. No big deal. I don't do it anymore. I just don't participate.
Right.
You know, but when my mind it is filled up with the things of God, and I'm not talking about being so heavenly minded, you're not earthly good. I'm not even sure what that means, but then I think my brain doesn't have room for the garbage. What do you think?
No, I agree. Whatever we fill our mind and our spirit with is how we're going to behave, speak, and act.
Yeah.
So why not do that? The funny thing is people who have issues with it haven't done it. It's like, you know what? Do it, and then tell me that you don't like it. Yeah. Don't tell me that you don't like it when you haven't even tried it. I mean, go get in your prayer closet, if you will, and have a real conversation with God. And if you're mad at him, scream and yell at him. Do whatever you have to do. He's a big God. He already knows what you're thinking. And he'll love you right into righteousness. But you have to be open-minded and willing. And you have to be humble enough to know that you're speaking to your Creator. It's like, I don't know why people get so weird, bent out of shape about conversations like this. Do you want to have a good life? Then do it. If you don't, then don't do it, but don't complain. Don't tell me that you hate your day and you're having a bad day and blah, 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 and your wife sucks and work's no good and on and on and on. It's like, stop. Go talk to God about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch people that have peace and serenity. And I'm not saying that they're always happy. That's a different thing. But people that have peace and serenity and calm in the midst of the storm,
yep.
Watch them and do what they do. Ask them, how do you do that? And then try doing what they do.
Exactly.
It's kind of...
They'll never regret simple. It if they do it. Stop talking to me about your problems. Go home and do it. And then report back to me tomorrow how that went.
Yeah.
And if you keep doing that every day, you're gonna have a different outlook and a different experience in your spiritual life than you are now. Period. It's a fact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anybody say, "Guy went home and prayed really deeply last night. I had this great time with God. And it was horrible." I've never heard anybody say that. So why don't you do it more?
So different ways to meditate. First of all, I would recommend highly that you if you've never done this before, get a piece of paper and write down things that you think are holy. Holy means set apart. So things that are set apart from the rest of the negativity in the world. Write some of those things down. Think about what in your mind is a pure thought. Well, a pure thought would be thinking of my brand new grandbaby. Okay, write that down. Write that down. You know, what's lovely to you? Oh, I just love the daylilies in my front yard. All right, write that down. You know, just start out by doing some of that, you know, and fill your mind with these things. And now go quiet your mind in the midst of the turmoil of the day. Find a place. I have a couple of favorite spots. One of them's in my, believe it or not, listeners, one of them's in my car while driving.
I'm
alone. And even if it's in the midst of traffic and chaos outside of the car, it doesn't really matter to me. Right. And I know, Roger, you're a driver.
Of time in my car. Yeah. I love my road trips, especially out in the middle of nowhere. Oh, my gosh. I'm just amazed by God's, you know, beauty.
Every Friday, I drive from Albany to Lebanon. And for those of you who know that route, you know what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't, let me explain it to you. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. The cows are beautiful. The sheep are beautiful. The countryside is beautiful. The rainbows. Oh, my gosh. We have endless rainbows all the time. Just beautiful. You know, it's such a treat. So I go from Albany to Lebanon. I go work with two sponsees, one at 4 o'clock, one at 5 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock, we're in our 12-step home group. And then I get to, this is the time of year, it's still light out, I get to drive back home. And it's a beautiful time. And sometimes I'm listening to something, you know, a spiritual podcast. Sometimes I don't turn on the radio or the podcast at all. And I don't even talk. I just listen. I just look and I'm thinking, wow, I get to live here. This is absolutely amazing. I get to live here. Other times, I like to sit on my back patio, you know, and just look at the arborvitaes. I don't like arborvitaes, but when I look at them and I think about these things that are so cool in life, for some reason or another, I really like looking at them. It's a weird thing, right? My shed, I like looking at my shed. That sounds silly. I like my shed. It's cool. It's a cool shed.
But see, that's it. So everything you just described is a change in our perception.
Yeah.
Because before, we weren't looking at any of that stuff.
No.
And we weren't contemplating how wonderful God's creation is. We were stuck in ourselves talking about what was the next thing I was going to do. And I got, just the insanity between the true and the false. It's like it says in the doctor's opinion. After a while, we can't decipher the true from the false. So we weren't looking at creation. I didn't even go on drives when I was loaded. If I did, it was because I was going someplace to get something.
I did, but I never remembered how I got there.
Well, that's my point. We didn't go out there to be in nature and speak to God.
No.
I was running away from whatever I was running away from, and that was a way place to go or something. You
right.
Know, I don't know.
Right. So I want to tell
this. It's just so different.
I'll tell this quick story, and then we're going to present our closing song and get a final thought from you. So I'll never forget it. I remember this so vividly. My drinking buddy, and who I deemed as my best friend at the time. It was a very unhealthy relationship. But his name was Larry. And Larry and I were sitting in this park in Castro Valley, California. And we've been drinking all day, right? And we're sitting on this bench. And it was interesting how he and I would drink and then we'd moralize, you know, we'd solve all the world's problems and, you know, like crazy stuff. And we're sitting there and it got really quiet. And we're guzzling Schlitz malt liquor and not a peep out of either one of us. And I look over at him and he's looking down on the ground. I said, Larry, what are you looking at? He goes, I'm looking at the ants. And there was this row of ants that was following this crack in the sidewalk. And I said, what are you looking at ants for? And he said, someday maybe you and I will get to the place where we can appreciate something as simple as that. Wow.
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 And he was choked up. He was remorseful for where his drinking had brought him and where it had brought both of us. You know, I've never forgotten that. And now I have that back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a trip. And so to this day, if I'm walking or if I'm in my front yard and I see a crack in the sidewalk, I always look for ants.
Yeah. So I was just in the rainforest in Peru.
Yeah.
And I'm there's all kinds of crazy ants in the
jungle. Oh, bet there are.
There's leafcutter ants and bullet ants and all kinds of, and I watch all of them.
Wow.
I look at every spider web and marvel at how they make it,
yeah,
and the colors of that, and the way the trees grow. Listen to the birds and the monkeys. None of that was important to me before.
Mm.
Now I never want to miss an opportunity to watch a bird. I was just up at camp with the kids from church, and we were in a mountain 6,000 feet, and there were just beautiful birds, free as heck, just flirting around and eating and flying from tree to tree. I just sit there and marvel at that.
Yeah.
Look at the beautiful surroundings and hear the quietness of nature. I didn't do any of that when I was drinking.
This, what you just said, is a great segue into this song. Do you have any closing thoughts before we go there?
I would just encourage everyone to find a quiet place, speak to God honestly, wholeheartedly,
yeah,
with whatever's going on in their life, and sit in quiet and listen. Read the scriptures too. Read Psalms. Read the New Testament. It's full of God's promises to you. And then speak to Him about them. Speak to Him about what's going on in your life. Ask Him to help you and give Him glory and praise for whatever is going on.
Yeah, and listen, if you are one of our listeners who is not a believer, who doesn't claim Jesus as your higher power, we're glad you've tuned in. But I would encourage you, approach the Bible as sacred writings. If that's what you have to do, just like if I were to open up something that Gandhi wrote,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I look at that as a sacred script. Just open up Psalms and Proverbs and treat it as a sacred script.
Psalms
you can do that.
Great.
You can do that.
Yes.
So, you were talking about the stuff in Peru, and I was talking about the ants in the cracks of the side, things that we appreciate today that we didn't in the middle of our drinking and using. This is a great segue into this song. This is a song that Rebecca St. James created. And if you go see the movie, you'll understand this. But this is the brothers from King and Country with their sister Rebecca singing this song, "You Make Everything Beautiful."
Grant me serenity to accept things I cannot change. Grant me the courage, Lord, to change what I can, wisdom to know the difference. In my weakness, you can shine. In your strength, I can fly. And you make everything, everything beautiful. You make everything, everything new. You make everything, everything beautiful. In its time, in your time, it's beautiful. Serenity, Lord, and patience, for things will take time. Grant me freedom to walk a new path, and let me feel your love. In my weakness you can shine, in your strength I can fly. And you make everything, everything beautiful. You make everything.
everything new. You make everything beautiful. In its time, in your time, it's beautiful. Lifting open hands to you, my Savior, beautify my soul. Knowing you redeem my pain and failure, purify my soul. Purify my soul. And you make everything beautiful. You make everything new. You make everything beautiful. In its time, in your time, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
The brothers up for King and Country and their sister, Rebecca St. James. Do yourself a favor and go see the movie Unsung Hero. It's in theaters now. Well, I'd like to close this show with two prayers, the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man, along with the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Yeah, kitty, 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 kitty.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.